I like those questions. Well. They're really good.
You've done well, yes.
The gentleman down the back. You know, we need to, when we're dealing with our kids, we need to show them that they're wrong, that they're in sin, but we don't want to crush them. We don't want to crush our kids. And we do that by praying with them, by explaining to them where they've gone wrong. But we don't want to crush their spirit. You know, some kids, and you can overcorrect. Obviously, if you overcorrect to the nth degree, that's cruelty. Yeah, and I don't know. There's no old people here, but you know, some of the stories I hear about the old timers, they used to get belted night after night after night. Well, that's not correcting their will. That's crushing their spirit, and that leads to anger. No, that's right. Yeah, and some parents were really cruel, and there's no excuse. There's no excuse for cruelty, but we need to, And I used to ask my kids, my boys especially, if they'd obviously done wrong, I would sit them down and say, "Well, what have you got to say for yourself?" And they would always say, "Yes, Dad, I did the wrong thing. I told a lie." I would often ask them, "Well, what do you think the punishment for that should be? You determine what the punishment is." I do that sometimes. And David would often say, "Yeah, I think I need the strap, Dad." Yeah, he would say that. Area of life, there's correction. You know, if you join a football team, if you want to be a good footballer or a good basketballer or whatever, your coach is going to correct you, you know. And he'll say, "No, that's dumb. That you did a stupid thing there." You say, "Well, he doesn't like me." No, he does like you. He wants you to be a better basketballer.
But sorry, Phil, you would actually be
they can not be given lunch or dinner or certain privileges taken out from them. But I think Brother Young mentioned that if the children are disciplined early in the early stages, then you will be save a lot of heartache down the track. So if you start early as a parent when the kids are young, and you already sort of cut their horns while they're still growing, then you will be spared the heartache of trying to discipline your kids when the die is cast already. You know? So I don't know if you will have a young family when they are the babies are maybe 1 or 2 year old, 3 year old, then the best. That's the best.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I often use the illustration of the little baby in the high chair, and you know they've got their Weet-Bix, you know, or their porridge. "Oh, I don't like this." You know, and of course, what's our first reaction? That's funny.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard not to laugh at kids when they're being rebellious, but that's a mistake, because that's when you have to nip it in the bud. You have to say, "No, that's rebellion. Rebellion is the thing you have to jump on. Rebellion is the thing." And that's, you jump on that early and show them, "No, you're not going to get away with that. You don't throw your porridge out of the high chair. Now, if you make a mess, that's fine. But if you deliberately say, 'No, I'm not going to eat that,' whatever it might be, whatever the circumstances might be, that's rebellion. And with kids, it oozes out of their pores, you know. Of course, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. So you get that early, and you know, you don't have to. And it's not rocket science to say, "No, that's wrong. That's wrong." And they might need a little tap on the wrist or smack on the rear end or whatever, however you want to do it. But that's when you start, when they're just little tykes. And that's the will coming out. That's the flesh. That's that little rebellion. You wouldn't think that little three-month-old babies could be rebellious. Ah, they're rebellious. They know it, boy.
That's what I was referring to when I said, too, about some forward thinking, is recognizing that it's whilst it may look funny for a one-year-old to do that, it's not when they're 16.
No.
But if you don't correct it, you're going to have, that's exactly what you're going to have, but on a grander scale. The primary definition of the word three times in the Bible, the primary definition is early. So if you take that word B times and replace it with early in every situation, in every verse of the scriptures, it always fits with early. That's the primary definition there. Chasing him B times, chasing him early. Don't wait for it to grow out of hand before you finally try to get on time.
That's right. Don't wait till they're a three-year-old.
Yeah.
Because their character is already just about formed by the time they're three or four. Yeah.
Good. Another question.
Well, I've been married 35 years and I've spent at least 15 years of that away from my family. And especially when my kids were little, I was always away in ministry, just travelling and stuff. But as I said the other night, I purposed that when I was home, I was home. When I was there, I was there. You know, I'd say to my boys, come on, it's footy time. Let's go and kick the ball. Let's go and play cricket. Let's play Scrabble. Let's do this. When it's time to take the girl. And I would try and schedule time with each of the kids as well. So this is time with Jesse. This is time with Dave. This is time with Grace. Here's little Sarah. We'll take her. She's a little bit younger, but she may need less time. Just be all there. When you do have the opportunity to do it, you know, be all there. My concentration is on the kids. When they were kids, I didn't have mobile phones, thankfully, in those days. But, you know, even now, kids time, just put your phone, leave it at home somewhere, put it in the glove box, leave it. And just, you see this all the time with parents down the street with their kids in prams, you know. And they're down the park and they're on the phone the whole time. The entire time. They're on Facebook, they're on whatever, you know, on the phone to someone. I thought, what are you doing? You've got your kid here and you're ignoring the kid. Throw your phone in the pond or just leave it in the car, you know. You can go back to it. Give your time, you know, when you're somewhere, be all there. And I reckon my kids would, if you were to ask my kids today, they would say, yeah, Dad gave us a lot of time. I spent a lot of time with my kids. Because it was concentrated time with the kids. Same with my wife. You know, I'd have to spend time with her and say, all right, today's we're going to have a picnic or do whatever. I haven't been here for 3 weeks, but today's your day. Whatever you want to do. I don't care. I know I've got stuff to do, but that'll wait. That's all you can do. I know time, everyone's the same way. The demands of time, whether it's in the forces or in business or in church, you know, everyone's time. Just whenever you get the chance, make sure it's good time, quality time with your kids.
Yeah.
Okay. You do what you don't do. Actually, that's why my family is here in Australia. I used to work with the American Navy as a civilian employee, and the demands of my job. Requires me to work 7 days a week and 12-hour shifts because when the fleet comes in, hundreds of ships, and sometimes we overhaul like submarines, so it takes us about 8 to 10 months to overhaul a submarine, you know, and that requires us to work 7 days a week and 12-hour shifts every day. So my couple of my kids, when they were growing up, I leave home around 5 in the morning and come home midnight, because where I live is an hour drive by public transport. So my wife started complaining, you know, because my kids never see me. And even the neighbors thought I work overseas. So I come to realize I'm always at work. And by God's grace, the Lord allowed me to travel a bit in America and then come here to do some work in Australia. And I saw that some people, they only work 5 days a week here in Australia. And I said, this is a great place. I can only work 5 days a week. So to make a long story short, we migrated here. And I started working 5 days a week. And my wife and I determined that we spend time. On weekends, we always go for short trips, like an hour drive or 2 hour drive. And we do everything as a family, all the kids with us. And we just do it the whole day. And then suddenly when things get busier, like my work become shift work later on, I decided to sort of stay on day shift. And you have to choose what you want to do, you know. Do you want more money or you want quality time with your family? So even my a workmate that works with me on shift, when I decided to just stay on day shift, he said, yeah, you'll be losing a lot of money, you know, like 30-40K a year by on day shift. But the Lord honors those decisions most of the time, or all the time. And he actually get me to recover more than half of what I lost by being on day shift anyway, you know. And it's been a great experience here in Australia, but it boils down to really what are your priorities, you know, whether you want more. Sometimes parents said I need to work hard for my children, but there are times you really work hard because you want other things. You want to maybe buy a nicer car, you know, or toys for yourself. Not really for the children, you know. And you just have to admit to yourself that I can live 30,000 less a year, but I have more time for my children. And there are times like later on when my wife started working, we have to determine that if there's any activity of our kids at school or they are sick, one of us will have to take time off, you know. We always support our children, whether they get good rewards at school or it's just we're just needed at the school. At least one of us or both of us will try our best to be supportive of each child. And it's a great experience to see. And we didn't do everything right. There are times it's mostly I can thank God, but I also thank my wife that when I can't do my responsibility because of work situations, she's always there, willing to sacrifice her leave and her time to be with the children. And people ask me, what's my secret? And like, brother, I don't know. It's just the grace of God. But one thing that my wife and I determined, we haven't been great Christians. I've been a Christian for a long time. But like if you grab my Christian life, it's like a sine wave, like still brother's word. But the only thing going for me is I know that it's only God. and His word that can guide me. And when things I don't know the answer, I just have to pray and ask God to give me clarity on these things. You know? And 100% of the time, He'll give you some ideas out of the blue that fixes the situation. That's really how God works in a Christian's life marvelously, you know. And most of the time, He answers at the last minute. So just be patient, you know. When you're on a crossroad, He will give the answer. That's all I could say.
And so we've got the proof in the pudding here, whether it worked or not. And I mean, in all honesty, what would be your appreciation? What would you say? How would you respond to how that affected you and your siblings?
Definitely, it was. I can say that just that engagement that my parents had always, whatever we were pursuing, and just really helped. You know, I remember in year 5 and 6 was my first time. I was getting a little serious with my athletics and that, and then it was my first time getting to a certain level, and my mom and dad were both there. That meant a big deal. You know, it made me a bit more nervous because they were there, but, you know, I appreciated that, thinking back that, you know, those sort of milestones in my life, they were always taking the time, and I knew how hard they worked. But then also just that thought of just being together all the time as a family. I know for a fact that the reason why I'm serving the Lord now is because I saw it in my parents' life. That was always sort of part of the package for us as a family, was just serving together. And for a while, my dad was the only deacon in the church, and so he did everything. And we were there just alongside, and you know, he always made it something that we did together that was for the Lord, that we enjoyed. He never complained that he had to go to church to fix the leaky tap or to paint that wall or to pick up, you know, to clean up and that. It was always, come on, let's go. We jumped in the van and we'd head to church, and we always did that together as a family. And so I think that involvement, that engagement, and really just knowing that there were probably things that financially my dad sacrificed that flowed onto us, and helping us understand that we were doing that so that we had a better balance of life was good, and something I definitely can look back at and see that was beneficial for me. And then now with my family and the busyness of my, you know, my call in the ministry, I'm trying to carry that through and bring that into my family as well.
So the key in your answer is that you had to make a choice, sacrifice. So coming back to Phil's question, it's sacrifice. That's part of the key, hey? Okay, Phil, is that sufficient? Yeah, okay. Another question? Yes, sir.
Point number 7 here, it says, pray before and after correction. Then, from thinking back there, when discipline was applied, you weren't very happy about it, like in most cases. And often, in thinking about it now, when it comes to praying earnestly and being very upset, how do you get a good balance between that? Like,
the Bible says no correction is joyous. It's not much fun for either party. You know, for the dad or mum, sometimes there's not a dad, there's a mum there, or the one that needs to be corrected. It's not fun. The Bible says that. But it's necessary.
I'm just wondering, how do you get an earnest response out of very upset?
Oh, well, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it works out well. Sometimes the child stays rebellious. Well, you just got to, you know, that's why I said try and ensure that they understand why correction is necessary, whatever correction that might be, whether it's physical correction, whether it's reproof, whether it's taking away a privilege or whatever, that they understand. You know, that's why we need to talk these things through, rather than just say, no, that's wrong. You know, they need to know, what have I done wrong? And, you know, sometimes I still won't accept it. And it's not nice. It's not nice to have to correct kids. It's not nice for the kids, for the child that needs to be corrected. But as long as we pray and discuss, you know, the reason why we're correcting, that's why Hebrews 12, the Lord says, listen, you're not understanding this, that some of you are depressed, some of you're in the doldrums spiritually. Well, this is why, because I'm trying to correct you. So understand that, get up and get on with life, you know. So communication is very important. Communication.
Yeah, you know, parents, sometimes we are just reactionary. We just saw the situation, we discipline straight away. But there are circumstances like, you thought earlier that we didn't know and we just overreacted, you know. And it happens. And that's why it's important, that word communication. With my family, when sometimes we do devotion, I always tell this story to some of the young parents, you know. Sometimes in the devotion, I also incorporate maybe once a month or three times or once at every 3 months. I have an open forum with my children, especially when they're all teenagers. And as a dad or mom, we allow our children to say what they think, you know, and critique us without fear of persecution coming from our part. And for me, it's a humbling experience, because my children will tell my faults, you know. And there are times I said, did I do that? And, you know, that's when I need to come to the Lord and say, oh, Lord, I've done these wrong things, you know. But it's very hard to apologize to your kids. But my wife and I done that, you know. And we humble ourselves to them. But after that, then it's our turn to say our side to them. But I believe that communication, two-way communication, even my children have families now. They come to us and they tell us what their plans, because they know we're not gonna hammer them with their idea, but we just would like to help our kids, you know. So, and it's really a humbling experience when your children tell you your wrongs, you know.
So if I distill down what these guys are saying, I guess, again, I'm just distilling for help, that's all, is that the example set by the parents willing to be corrected and prayerfully as an example to confess it. So that's the earnestness that you're looking for, even though it's difficult. And that example being set then translates into children also recognizing that the parents can do it, they can do it too. You don't always want to have to do it to confess that you were wrong. But
oh,
to be able to say it, it goes a long way, doesn't it?
Same in a marriage relationship, you know. Sometimes, oftentimes, us fellas, we say the wrong things to the missus. We say something that's, you know, a little bit cruel or whatever. And we think, oh, they'll get over it. But the Spirit of God says, no.
Yeah.
Go and apologize. I don't know about you, but I just keep trying to rationalize. Nah, Lord, nah. That's just going to open old wounds up. We don't want to go and apologize. Really? Yes. Until you go and say, until I say, Rob, I'm sorry. I said the wrong thing. I'm sorry. I was tired. I wasn't thinking. It was a cruel thing to say. So please forgive me. Oh, it's all better then, you know. The same with kids. Sometimes you have to do it and say, well, I'm sorry. I was short-tempered last night. And, you know, I want to ask for your forgiveness. And I understand why you were upset last night, because it actually wasn't your fault, it was my fault. Yeah, we've got to be man enough to do that. Definitely.
Does that help you, Sam? Yeah.
Good question.
Okay. One more. We got time for one more, and then I want to put one on.
Yeah. Oh, well, as I said, using my son David as an illustration, David always needed correcting. And, you know, half the time he would just give himself up and say, yeah, I've done the wrong thing here. He had a violent temper, old Dave did. And, and I would correct him. But then Robin and I were talking. We realised he had these problems, and he was getting called a monkey at school. And to me, if someone calls me a monkey, well, that's fine. But for David, it was really playing on his mind, and his behaviour changed. He was upset at that, and then his behaviour, he was cranky at home and getting in trouble with his brother and his sisters. And, well, hang on, what I realised that, hang on, there's an underlying problem for this. And he had this fear of, or maybe not a fear, but, you know, he was getting a hard time at school, and then other times he was allergic to stuff we didn't know about, and that was influencing his behaviour. So in that respect, we had to change our discipline, as in, hang on, you know, we were disciplining David. You know, I need the every hour on the stick. And I thought, well, hang on, this is not working because we're approaching it from a wrong angle. So sometimes there's fears, or there's things they're doing wrong, but there's an underlying reason for that. And so that's, again, we just need to communicate. Sometimes kids don't tell you. Sometimes it's hard to get. Some kids just clam up. So you need to dig. You need to dig and say, well, why are they acting this way? This is not normal. There's something wrong here. You know, maybe there's a problem at school, or there's a problem at church, or we need to try and get to the bottom of this. Because maybe they don't need discipline. Maybe they need, there's something else they need, and it's not discipline. So that's what I was thinking.
Okay, so mine is, if you had to boil it down to the single best thing that you did as a parent that you now see worked for God's good in the lives of your children, what was the single best thing? And I guess obviously the answers could be taken to a church, lead them to the Lord, and I'm going to take those as givens.
Yeah, yeah.
But outside of that, what was the single best thing that you did that played out for the Lord's good in the life of your child?
Oh, well, that's an easy one. It's just, I have to walk with God. I have to make sure that I'm walking with God every day. When I'm not in fellowship with the Lord, when there's a rebellious spirit in me, you know, when there's a cantankerous spirit in me, that'll flow through to my marriage, to my kids. So I have to keep my fellowship with the Lord. That's the most important thing. You know, the communication, the being a good dad and being all there, and even the correcting and training and educating and mentoring, that's all important. But if I'm not walking with God, it's not going to work. You know, I just need to fellowship. I need to spend time with God. Just make sure that I'm walking with God. And it's, you know, and we fail. We're always failing in that. But I understand that, because we're sinful flesh. But, you know, keep your walk with God right, and that flows through to every area of family, marriage. That's what I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with the brother. Yeah, it's a partnership. So you partner with God, you partner with your spouse. Well, I said that this is a bit embarrassing, but I want to be transparent to you guys. You know, when the Lord allow us to start the church, and I know it's a big responsibility, during that time as a dad, I was backslidden because I was working ship at that time. And I never really have joy in serving God. We got involved in this Bible study. And I realized, see, as a dad, you have to be honest to yourself whether you know what you do, you know. So I realized that I haven't been really being a good example to my kids at that period of my life. And the opportunity that God presented for us to be involved in starting a church, really dawned on me and my wife. So I can boil it down to, on top of what Brother Precious said, is a commitment, you know. My wife and I committed to the Lord. We prayed to God that if you want to use us, we made a covenant with God that, okay, God, you want us to serve you, but also we will make sure that I won't be away from the church, but I will be at the church every Sunday as we start the church, and for the rest of our life that we are able, you know, we serve you. And God honored that commitment. And I think it flows on to how the children see how we serve the Lord. And it's a really humbling experience for me that as I see myself and my wife trying to serve, He give us new opportunities, you know. But we involve the children. And the children, I think, hated us when we have to pick them up and put them in the van because we need to leave 2 hours early because we're picking up some visitor and then setting up the church at the same time, you know. So it's a hard thing to do. But now that I'm looking back, it's, I think we're reaping the rewards now that... the Lord allow us to be. And I have plenty of opportunities the Lord presented to me, even in the churches in the Philippines. We were with Pastor Kit in his church. I was asked to do certain things. That's why I left the church, because I'm running away, you know. I don't want to do things, you know. But the Lord is still directing our family to get involved, and I realize what I'm doing, so I stopped running. And I just have to commit. And God just done wondrous things. And that's why I said to some of the people, they asked me, I really never experienced having big problems with my children. So sometimes people ask me for advice. I said, I can't really advise because I never really experienced those things, you know. But one thing I can tell you is it really begins from the dad, you know. If you walk with the Lord, He just put everything in place. And the provision He provides, you know. Whether physical needs and... your maturity. I'm not saying I'm matured. I'm still learning. I realized that as I grow older, I never really learned much of the Lord. That's why I'm here on the camp, you know. I still need to be taught. So there's nobody that can say they arrive, you know. As long as we are in this place, we need to learn, and we need to just serve the Lord, look after our family. Children.
Okay. Well, all right. We have to knock it on the head there, guys. So we're going to do that now. We have lunch in just a few minutes. So we just need the three guys that would be willing to go over and serve. We'll go ahead and close here in prayer. As the three men make their way over to serve, could the rest of us grab the books and get them put in the box? Nathan knows where that is. And then we'll also stack up the chairs and get them brought in.